Now we have to repeat the phishing discussion.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, let's start over. So yeah, welcome to the community health call on April, what is today, 17th. Again, my thinking on the agenda, again, I'm open to other people having other topics, but my thinking on the agenda was we, especially with Dan coming back, it probably is a good time for us to step back and review some recent discussions and to think about next steps. And last time's meeting did have some pretty substantial conversations, but I know many of us weren't here, so it's probably a good time to, you know, review and debrief that as well. So I don't know if a more kind of retrospective, reflective, at least first half of the agenda makes sense to everybody, and then maybe the second half we can talk about next steps. If that sounds good to everybody.
That sounds good. Are we expecting Jamie today?
Let me double check the invite to see if she said yes. Sorry, I'm pulling it up. Just 1 second. No, she has not accepted.
Okay.
I did have an email with her yesterday. She's definitely still interested. So just to share that email, she did want to find some time with me to talk about concrete next steps with a pilot, which I guess is a good segue to debriefing the meeting last week. So last week we had two presentations. I don't know if people had a chance to listen to that meeting, if you weren't able to be there or not, but Jamie did present about the Linux Foundation's overall diversity efforts for the year, and was really excited that, you know, we and Hyperledger had been self-organizing around similar themes. So she wanted to talk about how do the groups align, how do we, you know, not duplicate efforts, how do we work together. That was a very high level. So she did, when she reached out to me earlier this week, Dan, she said she wanted to have a chance to talk about like more concrete next steps for this group. So I don't, again, if you listened to that meeting last time, it was more, again, here's what the LF is doing, let's coordinate. It didn't really get into a ton of specifics, but I don't know, if people were on the call and had other impressions, certainly share your thoughts, but I don't know, were there any comments, questions from people who were either on the call last time or have listened to the call since about what the LF is doing and how we should be coordinating with them?
So I did get to listen to the recording. So thanks for posting that. So it was nice to be able to go back and attend retroactively. my takeaway, and I tried to put that out to the meeting list, was it sounds like maybe a coincident next step for both the LF generally and our team within Hyperledger is to do something concrete around gender. And we wanted to be able to baseline so we could know whether or not we were making progress on the gender question. And that's where I'm not quite sure what we have in our set of tools that we can do.
Yeah, and that's a good question. And that speaks to the second half of the meeting last week. Salona and had invited some people from the Indy team to come and present. I mean, my understanding from what, and Salona, I don't think is able to make the call to the either. So I'll paraphrase, and Rye or Dave, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm missing anything. But Salona has been coordinating along with Rye with the Chaos Group and has been talking about how to get some of this data for a baseline. And my understanding is that Chaos is not really necessarily yet come up with a great solution for this. So Salona was, that's why she had reached out to the Indy team saying, is there a way that maybe Indy can be used to help us gather this information? So that was the second part of the call, the previous call. Indy was doing a demo, and then there was a discussion about how perhaps a system like that could help us gather this baseline data in a privacy respecting way. So I don't know if that answers your question, Dan. I don't think, and Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if Chaos has a short-term recommendation for us about how to get this or not, or if we kind of need to sort it out on our own.
Ryan, you might be on mute if you're trying to answer.
Yeah, sorry. Someday I'll figure out how to work the Zoom meeting. I think there's nothing out of the box, right? So we have a longer term discussion of how do we capture, if we can get Indy integrated into LFID, then we're like 90% of the way there. So that's kind of the internal discussion as part of the community bridge effort. So that's kind of a larger discussion. And we just need to make some decisions on if we're committed to gathering the gender statistics. You know, we had talked before about using, a certain list, and we just need to, I think, commit, make decisions, say, this is the metric, this is the list of genders. I don't remember what organization we got that from. And just, report, to Salona, this is what we want to do. How can we work with Community Bridge to make this happen? I mean, so I kind of see that as the next step.
But right, to your point, that's a longer term thing, right? I mean, I don't remember time frames, if there was a mention of time frames at the last call, maybe I'm forgetting, but I mean, that's not going to be something available soon, right?
Right. But I mean, the other discussion that we had was how do we collect this data, right? And safely and securely, et cetera, right? So that's kind of, that was the other discussion we were having in the short term, right? I don't think we want to use like Google Forms, right? Or something like that. I mean, correct me if I don't want to speak for the group there, but.
So is that to say that any short-term options we want to not go forward with because they have unfixable problems with them?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Sorry. I guess I need to be less scatterbrained.
So I think part of what we're struggling with is that if we are going to collect data, who's responsible for it? Who would be authorized to analyze it? Where will it be archived? And what's the retention schedule for it? So that those are the four big questions that need to be answered, because really, if that information gets out, I think, or someone taps into it when they shouldn't be, or people start sharing it because they've come across it, it's going to, cause this whole project to nosedive, and there are legal ramifications to it. And I don't know if Jamie, because I haven't had a chance to listen to last time, the last meeting, but is Linux going to be the holder of that information, or the foundation, or how has that been resolved yet? Because I think we need to resolve that before we start thinking about implementing it. We have to plan for it first and have those answers, because if we're all ready to, send the request out to the community, but we don't have those answers, I think it's the cart before the horse.
Agreed. Let me defer to Salona. I'll ask Salona how she thinks that will be structured. I assume that the Linux Foundation would be the legal entity, but maybe that's an incorrect assumption. I mean, I don't have the answer to that.
No, I was just going to say, whoever's capturing information from this meeting or through the recording, I think that's the very first priority that we need to come up, that we need an answer to. I mean, that's number one.
You're storing personal data. There are a mountain of laws around this and best practices around this. We should probably engage with somebody who is an expert in doing this. Not necessarily an expert in diversity demographics, but just somebody who's an expert in, we have a reason to collect personal data. Here are the things you have to tell people when you're collecting that data. Here are the rules you have to follow when storing it. This is toxic waste. Personal identifying data is toxic waste, and it has to be handled properly.
So like Facebook or someone?
Right. Yeah, there
wow,
we go.
Wow, that was a snarky joke.
Yikes. That hurt me to the core. So listen, this was my thought that, Linux Foundation, I mean, they're kind of a supporter of this group, and Linux has its own diversity staff. They have their own compliance team, I'm sure, or legal, or HR legal, where since we're under the auspices of that foundation, I think those questions should be asked of them. And one good question might just be, hey, we're going to be collecting this data. Can you be the repository for it so that we're compliant? And ask them, because a lot of times how HR offices or EEO, well, it's collected through HR, and then demographic information is usually given to a diversity and inclusion officer. So when you apply on a job, there are those typical questions. Are you a vet or a non-vet? Are you disabled or not disabled? What is your ethnicity and race, national or ethnicity and race? And so they already have probably a system that is set up. I mean, I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel. The system that's already set up for that. There could be, if they don't have, I'm sure they have that system, or would know how they would be able to use their own resources to house our data. Maybe it could be kind of an offshoot. Let's say it's in Workday of the open source tech group, or the legal department might have suggestions for an off-the-shelf program that the open source group that the community could purchase, and it could do some of the work. But we just have to make sure, because I just don't think the open source group should collect, should house this data, and I don't know that anyone should be able to analyze it. I mean, right, I think right. that I should be outsourced. You know,
I think that the Linux Foundation is sort of the legal entity under which all this volunteering happens, and I think that they would be the place where it's stored, and there might be some existing processes that they could port over from their hiring practices, but what would be a little bit different are, and these are volunteers coming in to contribute to the community. It'd be great to have somebody from, I guess it would be the Linux Foundation's Human Resource Department, be able to join us and talk about some of these specifics. I created a meeting notes page on the wiki like we do for some of the other ones.
Oh, thanks for doing that, dude.
Yeah, so I don't know if you were already capturing notes.
I could have been doing a better job in the past. No, that's great to be doing a little bit more thorough job about this. I've been capturing basic AI action items.
Yeah, I just meant today.
Oh, so today, not yet. No.
Okay, so Mandy, you said 4 key questions.
Mm-hmm.
Could you repeat those for me?
Yeah. So. Well, gosh, if I can remember them. So we talked about, who's going to collect it, who's going to analyze it, where is it going to be stored, and what is the retention rate? And I'll add a 5th, and that would be access. I guess that kind of goes with the first one, who's going to collect it. So it can either go at the end or it can go in the beginning. But those are the 4 key questions that need to be answered before data collection is engaged and so implemented. And so certainly I think while we're finding those answers, we can talk about what questions we want to ask, because that came up in the past too. If we're just going to focus on gender, are you male or female, to see what our gender data looks like, I would just say, keep in mind, and I'm sorry to keep tossing this stuff in here, but it's going to come up. You might want to think about male, female, the cisgendered, transgendered, not trying to get into anybody's business, but a question would be, how do you identify male, sure. female, other, male, female, other, or something like that, instead of trying to come up with all the categories, because there's like a new category every day as people explore themselves and the world is changing. And so then my question is, if we find, as we suspect, that there are way fewer females in this community, and I'm talking about the whole open source group, well, we have that knowledge, then what are we going to do about it? And if we're going to go out and ask a question, why would we ask just one? If that's all we want to know about, that's fine. But other questions, I think, could be put into there. And it depends on, I mean, you know your people more than I know your people. Will people tolerate 5 or 10 questions? And those other questions could be more than just gender diversity, but they could be more than diversity. It could be, what is the reason that you joined this group? How has this group assisted you? What would you recommend for improvement? Would you like a mentor? What other even qualitative questions? What would you like to see in this group, or what would you like this group to offer beyond what you see? Do you have any great ideas for growth?
And I think that's great. You're right. I mean, we may want to ask more questions than just establishing the baseline. Like, what I would like to ask, you know, what can we do to make it easier to contribute, for example? And also, and also to build on your point about not reinventing the wheel, I think, for example, coming up with a list of categories is something we don't have to do on our own. I know that's already been an internal discussion as part of the LF's, you know, diversity efforts about what are the standard, you know, gender categories we want to ask of all our communities so that we can then have some sort of, you know, ability to compare across projects. So we don't have a different category than, you know, Kubernetes, for example, or whatever. So yeah, I mean, that could be a benefit of, you know, again, more aligning more with the LF. So, I mean, as far as notes and action items go, you know, I will speak to Jamie. I'll bring up these questions that we're bringing up. It sounds like Rye's going to talk to Salona. So, you know, hopefully that means at our next meeting, we'll either have them here to answer some of these questions or us being able to report back.
So I had a different question for people. What are we shooting for? If, for instance, we say, you know, the people that identify as non-male come back at 12% of our population, and we somehow find out that the industry average is 10%, do we say, oh, we're doing good? Or, I mean, is the overall goal to try to increase diversity regardless of the outcome of the poll?
I think the goal was to understand, are we inclusive? How inclusive are we? Because it's not just about diversity, it's about diversity and inclusion. So diversity is one aspect that you look at where we talk about what the workforce looks like. Okay. Inclusion is how we have people stay because they feel comfortable, they feel welcome, they feel valued, just like people who are majority versus minority. And so that's, you know, that's my thought for this group. And if we understand that maybe this group doesn't look like America, it probably will look like America in STEM. You know, the whole. If you look at the census, if you look at the U.S. Census, women and people of color, the numbers are much lower than the majority population, which is mostly white and male, or at least male, right? And if we want more inclusive ideas, more dimension, more creativity, different lenses, those are the reasons to help a group be more inclusive, is because you're not homogenous where everybody thinks the same, and that's the value in it. And so I think, you know, there's a couple of different ways we can frame the value proposition, why we want to be diverse and why we want to be inclusive.
And Mark, I think your question brings up something I wanted to say too, and I think Mandy has said this in the past. I mean, even without getting the baseline information, I mean, I think we can make some assumptions just from anecdotal information we have, such as, you know, if I remember correctly, there were no women nominees for the TSC election last year, right? I think we know the numbers, regardless of what the numbers end up being in the baseline, we know they're not where we want them to be, right? I mean, so I think if I'm remembering correctly, you know, I think Mandy, correct me if I'm wrong, but we had said, like, we don't necessarily need to wait for the baseline numbers to come back in order for us to feel like we can move forward on some initiatives to help improve the diversity, right?
Sure. We have secondary data points outside of this group that reflect the likelihood that it's not diverse. And we can work on that, but we want to make sure that it's inclusive as well. I mean, what if a whole bunch of, let's say, women joined this group and left for X?
Sure.
We don't know that. So anyway, I mean, there's lots of different aspects of this. I mean, we could go into all kinds of different things, but baseline data would help. And baseline data on what people want from this group, what they see they can offer to the group. I mean, those kinds of things. You know, if you're talking about a survey or a sensing or a canvassing, whatever you want to call it. I also, too, I was just thinking about this, and this is an answer to the questions here. There's something that was done through Burson by Deloitte, and it's called High Impact Diversity and Inclusion Maturity Models. And so it kind of talks about where you start and then how you grow to go from kind of an initial entrance model into a maturity model. And David, I'll send that to you, and that way this can be something that people can look through as well.
Okay, great. So we can post it publicly?
Yeah, it's a public research document.
All right, great.
Yeah, so okay. You can feel free just to send that right to the list.
Yeah, and I can add it as a link on the wiki.
Hey, this is Karsten. I wanted to, I just wanted to offer a supplemental to kind of answer maybe to Mark's question or throw it out there to see what the group thinks of it is. Because one of the questions I heard was, are we measuring towards a goal or are we measuring for understanding where we are so we can see how well we're improving? And I think part of this is because people in the world may be asking that question, people across the project. And I think it's interesting, and I don't know, it's potentially a trap in some ways. I'm not really sure, just because people might have whatever their opinions are, but just a way that I was hearing from what Mandy was saying is that, you know, if we have to set a goal, can we just make the goal be that the project looks like the way the world looks like, that you've got this, you know, that the population is a really mixed group of people, and the project's not mixed, and it should look like that. You know, something that's just sort of like aspirational that people can understand. If that comes up, and I guess that also goes into what the messaging that Mandy was saying as well. Like, what's the how are we telling people of the intentions around inclusivity in particular, so people understanding what that means and why it matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because people could come back and ask those questions. Well, who cares? You know, we're here to get a piece of code, or we're here to, you know, extend our learning and our experience by being involved in X project. Why does it matter? And, you know, that could be one of the foundational statements as people come in. The other thing that we talked about is, you know, we can start, we've talked about this before, assessing the community as is, but then try to have some type of portal or entryway, because there are multiple ways to access open source, so that as people come in, we can make a statement, we can have that statement and just say, and to help us, you know, understand that we are being inclusive and inviting everyone to the table, here's a quick couple of questions we need to ask you, or we'd like to ask you, we'd invite you to answer. Usually when you take the word survey, everybody's like, not another survey. But you can do that, and that would be helpful. Because, you know, people are in and out every day. As a future kind of growth project, it would be to figure out why people leave. I mean, exit interviews, just like with jobs. Why are people leaving this company? Exit interviews or exit surveys are great. No one ever answered my question. People seemed kind of snarky because I knew there wasn't enough expertise for my project, so I decided to look somewhere else. you know, those are the kinds of things too that would be helpful as well, because, you know, you sometimes you can get more information from people going out than people coming in. That could be something for later, but we're talking about initial starting points, which would, one, you know, housing the data repository, who has access, et cetera. And then also, you know, creating the communications around what we're trying to do.
Okay, so I've captured a couple things. I don't know if people are trying to at all look at the notes.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, it doesn't really update live. I have to keep like publishing after I I do stuff. Some other things that we'd used before, you could like see people as they type if you're using like Google Docs. But
so that the Confluence does work that way. As long as everyone is editing at the same time, you'll see multiple icons in the upper right when people are editing. And you'll each see each other's edits live, but you're right. It doesn't, if you're not editing, you won't see the page updating live. So that's kind of the difference.
Okay. So I'm trying to do quick commits anyway. Anyway, the main thing that I wanted to say is, right. So I've captured a few things there. I want to make sure that everybody's in agreement there, that one of the things that was discussed in the last meeting that we rehashed initially in this one is that there's a desire for making some sort of progress. So can we have a single concrete next step? And the discussion in the last meeting was around, let's go ahead and make that be gender diversity. There's a lot of other important diversities, but let's pick that one as the starting one. And then in order to be able to measure whether we're having any impact on that, we need to first establish a baseline. And if we're going to collect data, then there's those four key questions that need to be answered. And in that, getting that baseline, that doesn't necessarily stop us from moving forward trying to improve things, but we really want to get going on the baseline so we know whether we're having the impact. And in the future, we'll want to figure out whatever our goal is for that diversity metric.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a little trouble capturing the inclusivity comments, so feel free to edit that. But I guess that all, everything that I just rattled off there, everybody's on board with that.
Yeah, that was helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, there's something else that I wanted to kind of tease out from that too, that I was hearing with a conversation with Jamie from before, and then going back to what Mandy said a couple of months ago as well around focus. And so I think that I guess what I'm getting to is that if we focus on improving inclusivity, lowering the barriers to participation for the project and making it as easy for as wide a group of people as possible, then that benefits a wide range of groups, including the one group that we're interested in specifically increasing and tracking to see that we're increasing, which is gender diversity. So those are not mutually exclusive goals, right? And in fact, we have to make sure that we do, you know, we can't, you know, tighten the nut on one side too much, or we're gonna get the wheel out of track on the other side, sort of thing, right? So, and this may also help address some of the concerns that'll come up with the community. Well, some people say, well, what about this group? You know, and why is that group not important? And it's a way of framing it. So it's saying, you know, it's not that it's not important, but, you know, we or whatever, you know, you're just trying to get out of that side thing. So,
are going to hit situations where it's like, so why aren't we doing a sensing around white male participation?
Right. Well, there's definitely that end, right? Yeah. But I'm thinking
kind of really
around color, for example, or around ability and disability, and that, you know, there's any number of different things.
Sure.
But I think from our perspective, I think that we can both, and then this also goes to the questions. Like you said, if we're going to ask one question, why not think through all the kinds of things we'd want to know and help improve over the course of time, even though right now we're focused on, you know, we're saying this, and I think people will get that. It's kind of like, hey, let's start with one area and work on improving that. We'll iterate on these things as we go forward in the future, which then fits nicely with what the Linux Foundation and Community Bridge are doing. you know, so there's a whole fit to get across that. So I just wanted to kind of highlight that, which also gets into the question of there are things we can be doing right now, even though our data's not, you know, incomplete and imperfect. Why wait? We know we have a problem, and if we do anything might help. And so what if we miss tracking for 6 months or a year to get perfect original data? We have a problem we're trying to solve that's more important than tracking proof that we're solving the problem, if that makes sense. So I think that also gets to the kind of sense of urgency that people are having about wanting action, something to do. And it's nice to have something to do that is straightforward enough. And that we're not trying to solve every problem right now. We're saying, let's focus on this particular one, and we'll learn from that going into the future. So that it's a complete story, I guess, that when people are looking at it and they know, they see themselves represented. Oh, hey, okay, next year they're planning to look at this group that I care about, and how that group's experience is, you know, and so forth.
No, I really, really like that. And I think it's mitigating a lot of questions that can sometimes be derailing. Oh, well, you don't care about X group kind of thing. Oh, yes, we do. We're starting with this, and then we're moving forward. We can come up with maybe the questions that we're thinking about for the survey. In the meantime, someone is in contact with Linux HR Diversity Legal to invite them in, and somebody from Linux is going to have to make a decision if they're going to be accountable for the data. They might say no, and if that case, well, that's great. Give us some of your expertise in how we can resource this out then, because then we're talking about either an off-the-shelf system bringing a third party in to do that work. If it's an off-the-shelf system, some of those questions still remain. So who's going to house that system? It's kind of the four questions still are unanswered, even if they aren't going to hold the data. And you just don't want to expose yourself to risk, because then, you know, the next thing you know, someone is going to say, someone let out my data and go for big pockets, which is always the corporation. So I think for the next meeting, it's really, really important that someone make those contacts and have them show up to talk with us about how that can help us move forward. What way can we move forward? Will you do it, or do you have suggestions? I mean, there might be organizations out there that do that for a fee and they take all the risk, right? It could be a third party thing. We just don't know.
Well, as far as that, I mean, to your point, Mandy, as far as that next meeting goes, I guess, Rye, I don't want to speak for you, but maybe you and I can both follow up on the you know, contacts we said we're going to make, and maybe you and I meet next week before the next call and kind of, you know, put some sort of a summary or a report together that we can share back.
He's maybe having trouble with his button again.
Okay, well, I assume he's hearing me. Rye, I'll put some time on our calendars for next week.
There you go.
I have a couple thoughts about gates, if we're ready to move into other areas.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, well, it occurs to me that for a lot of Hyperledger interaction, you want a Linux Foundation ID. And another big point of interaction is having a GitHub ID. We obviously don't have control over GitHub directly, but that's, if there's some thoughts about how we could make use of that, that would be interesting. And we would have access to the LFID process. And so if there's an opportunity to add some small question in that, some self-reporting on gender or these other questions, that would be another place to make use of a gate.
My GitHub is really interested in this. And my guess would be, if we reached out to GitHub, and I know that David has contacts with GitHub, we could probably have some sort of official working relationship on this, so that perhaps GitHub would use Indy to collect, to, you know, use this. I don't know, David, what do you think?
Yeah,
or anyone else?
I'm assuming you're talking to me.
Yeah, I'm assuming too.
I don't know. My contacts at GitHub are sparse at best. I'm basically the fly they can't swat. I bug them about feature changes in GitHub platform, but over in their product group. But I don't know. That's probably pretty big. Like, they don't like me because I just bug them. They're like, yeah, it's on a roadmap. Go away.
Well, we could reach out. LF and GitHub work together, right?
And, I know.
We have a Microsoft board member on the LF board, and that he's also, on, obviously Microsoft owns GitHub, but he's also involved in GitHub. So we could, ask for perhaps some assistance there if it was that important. But what do you think of the general idea of if we had an indie instance, trying to work with GitHub to get that so we both use the same one, LFID and GitHub, we're using the same.
Well, what's the purpose of indie here? Because all indie really does is track crypto keys so that private data housed by institutions that hold private data, like banks and governments, can then issue zero knowledge proofs based on that data. It basically allows organizations that hold the data to disclose things about the data without disclosing the data. So, in this case, you would have GitHub collecting the data, but then giving us zero knowledge proofs about it, disclosing certain things about it. But the challenge with that is you have to know exactly what you're looking for. You can't just go on a fishing expedition in the data and see what the trends are. Which is what we're going to want to see, right? We're going to want to be able to just throw all kinds of analytics at it and see what's interesting.
Well, that's kind of a problem, right? You can overanalyze any data to find something interesting. But if we were asking GitHub or LFIT, every quarter, what is the gender balance? How many people identify as, and we had a list of like a dozen genders last time that we had talked about, right? So yeah. If we went down the list and said, how many, and that's the proof, right? Give me a count.
Well, so that's aggregate data, and mm-hmm. You don't need zero knowledge proofs for that. A zero knowledge proof would be something like, is the percentage of females greater than 10%, or is it between, is it less than 50%? So you can't get precise numbers when you use zero knowledge proofs, because if it's precise, then you're actually just giving the data. I'm okay with aggregate numbers because that's de-anonymized. Or sorry, not de-anonymized, that's anonymized data. But you don't need indie for that. That would just be them holding the data and then giving us aggregate numbers.
What about Qualtrics, you guys?
What about what?
Qualtrics? So, you have all these companies out there that will do surveys for you, right? SurveyMonkey, and I don't really, but I know Qualtrics is one that Intel uses for our quarterly org health polls. So I wonder if they, and I don't know their attributes, I don't know costs, I really don't know anything, but I know it's something that's used. I would be glad to poke around on Qualtrics and see, because they could do the survey, we could get the aggregate data, and I don't know what ability we have to, analyze it. Again, if we use that, though, who's going to do the analysis? We would have to find out. So, I think I feel like we're trying to problem solve for something that I'm not sure we should be working on right yet. Because there's so many elements of it that are privacy related, and we really need not even to just, David, I would suggest that you not even invite them to the meeting. I would suggest having a meeting with them. And if you want me to attend, I would certainly volunteer to do that with the HR legal or HR compliance to see, or their diversity team. I don't know how Linux is set up. Sure, I'd be glad to sit in and try to kind of hammer this out and get it done. And if they can't do it, then we need to find out what they suggest and then move along, because it's the one thing, it's like the one stumbling block we have.
Yeah, I'm going to find out more. Yeah, Ryan and I will find out more. I mean, and to your point, it's possible that we're trying to solve for something that's already been fixed and we don't have to reinvent the wheel. So yeah, I'm going to learn more from Jamie. Yeah, Ryan will learn more from Salona, and yeah, we'll certainly loop you. Thank you for offering to jump into this conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, so Jamie is marketing, right? And with the additional role of focusing on diversity?
Yeah, she's the head of the diversity effort, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Awesome.
And your thought is she would then lead you to the right HR and or legal people?
Yeah, again, I don't remember if she covered it on the meeting last time, because I might be conflating a recent internal call, but she recently set up sub-teams for the diversity effort that are looking into different components. So one sub-team, for example, is around research, which I would assume is where maybe the data gathering would come from. So yeah, she's organizing different people that we could refer to or go to for specific questions.
So what we could work on, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, what we could work on is getting that survey ready.
That's a good point.
Do we plan on this being an annual event, or is it a one and done? I don't know that it matters at this point, but it would seem to make sense that we design something that would be annual if we're going to anonymize the data. So
can track progress, right?
Right.
For us, our elections are annual, right? So that's our that's the metric that we have, is how diverse was our election? Not at all. So that's like the one metric that we have that Hyperledger have, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that's a valid way to track our progress.
No. Okay. So look at the number of women who self-nominated for the TSC election. I think that number was zero.
Right. But I'm just saying, getting two women to nominate for TSC, does that mean we're done? Or?
Oh, no.
I think if it was annual, then we have a way to track progress and, because if we anonymize the data, we're not going to be able, in an ideal world, you'd associate responses with like a GitHub ID or something and be able to see if they stay active, if they go away, whatever, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and it makes sense. Yeah.
But if we're not going to be able to do that mapping, or we choose not to do that mapping, then we need to do like an annual thing.
I think if we're doing
Isn't there an algorithm though that corporations know their diversity statistics, right? But they don't go out every year and ask for them. They have a baseline, and then and I'm not a computer person, guy, so try to interpret my the way I'm communicating here. But how we could understand whether there's been progress made from the baseline is to have whatever program we're using analyze that based on entrances and exits. So we don't have to survey every year.
That we've got that effective gate that you had mentioned before. Mm-hmm.
Gate in, gate out, yep.
And then you've got sort of a continuous measure instead of an annual thing. So when I'm hearing annual, that makes me think, well, there's an explicit survey and we're hoping we get enough response on that survey that we've got a meaningful number. But if we do have
Typically when you survey, you don't get 100%. I mean, you're likely to get 8 to 10%.
Yeah, the response will be low, which is why I think Raya has a good point. It's good for us to have other factors that we can measure against. I think looking at the people who are, nominating into TC is a good non-survey.
Yeah, that's a data point. Yeah, because you have to triangulate, right?
Yeah.
and use more than one data point. Typically, you'd want to triangulate amongst three. So it could be the survey, the nominations, and the third point could be people in STEM through the census. I think that's too big, but I think that you know, we could find a third data point and make some assumptions, but I just don't know that an annual survey, we need a tool that will keep our numbers, keep that churn in place, so we don't have to keep asking people for the same information every year, because then you're gonna get fewer and fewer people answering to the survey.
Agreed, agreed, yeah.
My concern with using the TSC as a measuring point is, I think, people who feel they are leaders nominate themselves, right? If you don't think you want to be a leader and involved, you're not going to nominate yourself regardless of your gender. So it tells you
that's true.
You know, it tells you how many women are involved that consider themselves leaders that would nominate themselves, which, you know, we assume that maybe there's an equal number of women who feel they're lead percentage-wise, women who feel they're leaders to men who feel they're leaders, kind of thing. I don't know.
But then there's all the questions about why people don't nominate themselves, even if they do identify as leaders. There's things about,
Well, and when you think about it, you know, when you look at psychological studies of women in the workplace, you know, when women are less likely to promote themselves because culturally they're not trained to do that. They're not trained to be assertive and aggressive because there are naughty names associated with that kind of behavior, where a woman is being a bee versus a man who does that is being a leader. Right? Or being assertive. So, I mean, there could be lots of reasons why if we have 10 or 12% women, they don't nominate themselves. Maybe they're too busy, because studies show that even working women who are in marriages or relationships who have children still bear the brunt of home duties and childcare. Maybe they feel like they can't take on one thing. So, you know, if we're going to make it qualitative, I mean, there are all these variables out there, right? I mean, there could be a zillion variables. I really like, to your point, that it's not that we don't have enough women to nominate themselves. Maybe the women that we have reasons for not nominating themselves into leadership roles. But just to know how many we have would be good, right? I mean, that's just baseline data again.
Well, again, we can look at things like who are the maintainers on projects, right? And we know most, you know, I think from a lot of the names and all, we can infer some things like we did with who was running for TSC, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a data point that I think is valid.
Well, and the other thing, you know, is when we have our, events and yes, I understand you cannot determine someone's gender 100% by looking around the room. But when I look around the room, I see a lot of guys, right? And I see like very, very few women. At our event in Hong Kong, we had, I think, out of the 180-ish people who showed up for our event, it was 2 days. I think we had three or four women.
Wow.
Not good, right?
Mm-hmm. So is that a cultural thing as well? Where it was, you know, designed for people in Hong Kong?
I
think if you go to like, I live with a Swedish woman who's a fairly high powered manager here at Red Hat. You know, and part of some of my questions are, you know, I have a sister who's a doctor who very much a leader, take charge, another sister who, you know, runs a operating OR. So I'm used to being around women who are leaders. And so some of my questions may seem naive, but I guess, you know, I know culturally women in Sweden, they do the same thing as men without a second thought. People don't give it a second thought that much.
How would you estimate, this would be a self-selected audience. How would you estimate the audience for in Montreal, the people who showed up at the Montreal event? I think that that was overwhelmingly male, and I don't know if we even had double digit percent women who showed up.
For the Hackfest, it was definitely overwhelming male. I think
right
for the member summit, there were.
Right. Yeah. I meant for the Hackfest. Yeah.
Right.
And how long are these events? Can I ask how long are these events?
2 days, 3 days.
Yeah. And it could be, China could be, maybe women are less inclined to visit countries where they don't speak the language or feel there might be a danger to self. Or it could be, I can't find childcare to go there. Or I can't afford to go there.
The event in Hong Kong was set up for people in Hong Kong for that population.
Yeah, sure. So. There you go. And it could be that, or it could be other things. I can't afford childcare, or I can't afford to bring them along and find childcare. I mean, it could be lots of reasons why they don't attend these.
Hey, you know, if we step back, though, think about what we're doing here. We're trying to attract, like, who is the pool of people that we pull from for our events? They're all developers, right? I seriously doubt that there's going to be a random person who is not a programmer already or in the tech space already that would want to come to a Hyperledger event. I just don't think I think that's a long shot. There might be a few exceptions, but I don't think that's ever gonna happen. So we're pulling from a population of basically developers. So, and that population as a whole has very few women in it. So are we surprised when our events are, you know, let's assume at best we're randomly sampling, right? If we randomly sample from that population, the percentages of men and women in our events will exactly represent the proportions of men and women in the tech industry as a whole, in the developer pool as a whole. So, I mean, I get that, yes, we should absolutely do everything we can to be cognizant of the and supportive of the needs of both men and women in their desires to attend, you know, like the childcare issue is a very valid issue, right? Sure. But, you know, like I said, we can't really beat ourselves up here if we can't get the number past, say, 10% on women, because there just aren't women in the pool of people we're pulling from.
Right. And I think, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying, like, you know, yeah, it's great that we're measuring all this stuff, but, you know, we're kind of downstream of the bigger problem, right? If the lake that the river flows from is polluted, our river will always be polluted no matter what we do.
But I think that's right. We're trying to solve a problem that's not at the, you know, the very genesis. I mean, the issue with not having women developers is that there are not young women developers, or there are not girls exposed to develop. So maybe the root cause is, you know, different. And one of the ways that this group could help with that is introducing girls to program development. That could be one of the things that we're doing to help.
Right. And we discussed that a couple calls ago. I mean, the other factor we have to look at here is what percentage of our population is doing this because they're interested in it versus the percent of the population that's doing it because it is their day job and it is their assignment to do.
I would argue that we're going to be shocked by that number. I bet you it's like 90% do it because they're paid to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in which case, unless we go back to Intel or IBM or Bitwise and say, you need to hire more women to work on blockchain, we're not really going to be able to change it that much.
Well, I do. I mean, I think I'll just add one thought. I mean, I do think Dave has a point that we should focus on things that we have control over. And I think that's why maybe going back to the TSC election is a good one. I'll give you a very concrete example. I ran a meetup last night in San Francisco that had a woman from IBM do a demonstration on Fabric. She's an ambassador. Like, why hasn't she nominated herself to be on the TSC? I think we can look at the internal dynamics of the community, which we do have control over, and understand why people are or are not nominating in this case, in this example. And I mean, I can give you another example. I've had a second woman speak at a San Francisco meetup. Why you know, is there something in the community that's stopping them from seeing themselves as leaders or, you know, presenting themselves for the opportunities to be leaders? So, I mean, I do think we should absolutely focus on what we can. And I think it's those internal dynamics that are what we have control over.
We should actually ask them. Yeah, I mean, it's probably that simple. Be like, have you considered running for TSC?
And if not, why not? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And we should do that across the board, not just to the women, but like just anybody in our community. Like, what are the primary reasons that people don't nominate themselves to be on the TSC?
But inviting women in particular would be a way to go after them.
Right. We should.
Coming up on the top of the hour here. So, feel free to go in and add any notes that I might have missed. I didn't really try to catch so much of the freeform conversation at the end. And then I've got one action.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, thanks, Sam.
Yeah, and then there's the one action item for David, and some of the rest of you had some less specific action items for going out and shaking out contacts at GitHub and stuff. So I didn't capture that.
Yeah. And I'll share the recording around, look for an email later. And yeah, Rye, look for an invite for me for next week.
And if you want me to attend, let me know.
Okay, thanks, Maddie. Yeah, let me check in with Jamie just to see if we need to, maybe again, she's solved some of this already. I'll see where the state of the art is on her end and then, yeah, loop you in.
And if you don't need me, that's fine. No worries.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I just saying this end discussion also seemed to bring a couple of potential kind of key results we can track towards. Like, can we achieve the baseline of the rest of the industry? Can we do better than that? What kinds of things can we be doing specifically that contribute to solving the problem of, unpolluting the lake and all those sort of things? So that's good stuff. I'll try to capture that a little bit in the notes, but we can come back and refine those and see if those are actually the kinds of things we want to be targeting as key results to track.
That's great. Thanks, Carson.
Yeah. And for the record, I would love for us to explore childcare because as a single dad, I actually run into that problem.
Oh, yeah. Me too, Dave. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Absolutely. There's no end to the need. Mine are 26 and how old is she? Oh, 20. So I remember those days and I really empathize with you. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you guys will get to meet my kids in Tokyo. They're going to be hanging out with everybody with laptops.
Cool. Can they already break into systems?
They're working on it. My son was talking about hacking PUBG the other day, trying to get an aimbot going. It's like, three. Don't do that.
I need to drop, so I'm sorry. If I drop, I think it's going to kick everybody else off, so I'm sorry.
All right.
No, that's okay. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.